A quick note, at Focus Corp, we don't just do retained executive search, but we also place interim finance and accounting professionals. If your team's down a headcount, or covering a long leave, or you're tackling a special project, or you're just slammed, we can get experienced bilingual talent to you fast. Reach out. My contact details are in the show notes. Now, onto our show.
So when it comes to the details of the job they have, whether this is someone who's working at a higher level in HR or someone who's working as the, you know, the MD of whatever their respective company is, they all get their stuff done with regard to work. And then, of course, they're trying to balance the other side, which is, you know, the family, the personal life. What ends up generally falling to some extent to the wayside ends up being their own health. And really, it's most commonly not the fitness side that suffers most. Most people are smart enough to know that they should get some steps into the day. They should maybe go for a run here and there, consider going to a gym. The two major things end up being sleep that suffers and nutrition.
Welcome to the Focus Corp podcast, where we dive deep into leadership, talent, and the evolving world of business in Japan to help you focus on your core business. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Menya Higna, who's I've been lucky enough to have come over to the Focus Corp office and work with our people, which was fantastic. And I'm just happy to sit down and talk health with him as a marathon runner. So Menya is originally from Massachusetts. He spent 13 years helping people get stronger and leaner and feel better in their bodies. He blends practical strategies with proven systems to help clients build habits that last. He's the founder of MH Health Coaching, co-founder of Sogo Fitness, Japan's largest free fitness community, and co-founder of CoFit Movement, a Tokyo-based corporate wellness startup. He's also a level one certified functional strength coach, a level one certified nutrition coach, a certified personal trainer. And when he's not coaching, he's reading. He's got some great book recommendations on his website. He's playing piano, or he's getting a workout by chasing his four kids around the house, one of them who just had a birthday, I hear. Welcome, Menya.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So I want to start us off with this very important question.
Yes.
You've won a regional tournament playing Super Smash Brothers, and you have a 4 foot tall Star Fox trophy.
Yes.
Maybe why don't we talk about that and why you plan to take that with you to your grave?
I love it. Okay. So go back to maybe 2001 when the game comes out, Super Smash Brothers. I'm big into video games because my older brother loves video games, and this game comes out, and amongst my friends, I'm the worst. And I mean atrocious. Very, very bad at the game. Don't understand the controls. I've played fighting games. This doesn't make any sense. But it's all these characters that I love. It's Mario. It's Pikachu. I'm like 13, 14 years old, maybe 15 at the time. And so my friends are diehard into it. We're all basically nerds. And so I dive in deep, and skip forward about a year, I become the best in my friend circle. To the point where this friend of mine named Matt Samarco is his name. He says, Menya, there's this mall tournament. You've got to join the tournament. You could win this whole thing. And I'm thinking to myself, so I'm the best amongst my little friend circle now. I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to win some tournament because there's going to be some kid out there who's a, you know, next level. Turns out I go to the tournament and I win, basically. and this is with, it's a kind of a regional thing. So it's like anyone in Massachusetts can come and join this tournament. Yeah. You know, and I don't know who showed up or who didn't, but I win this little thing. And as part of the award, for the reward, you received the new game for GameCube, mm-hmm. which came out again years and years ago. And you also got this massive, plastic Star Fox trophy, which I brought with me to my college dorm, which at the time I thought was a great idea. It was probably a massive turnoff for anyone who visited my room, but I loved it, and it's still in my parents' home in the U.S., and I have every intention of either passing it down to the next person to just enjoy the joy of Star Fox, or actually just keeping it with me, you know, forever. It's one of the highlights of my gaming time. I basically stopped gaming entirely when I went to college, so that was a beautiful little window of playing video games and apparently winning something.
That's brilliant. Well, you got to do it for a little bit, right? What
Yeah.
and then what got you into health and fitness?
Oh, so to keep it short, I have always played piano. I started playing when I was 8, and I've always loved exercise. I remember being the cousin. I had this other cousin, but I was kind of, I'm probably amongst my family, I'm the cousin who has always been into running and push-ups and pull-ups and all that random stuff. And it's funny, I never really noticed that this current career path could be part of my future when I was younger. It wasn't until a conversation with my parents, probably in my late 20s, so several years into doing the personal training work, where I asked them, guys, did you ever see the possibility of me going down this path? Because my intention was always law school. It was always, that was from probably 14. In my mind, it was law school. Go to law school, do corporate, start my own practice, be a, either solo practitioner for a very long time, or, build some firm and go down that. That was always the path. And my parents said, yeah, actually, you've always loved this whole fitness thing, ranging from push-ups and pull-ups and exercises of all different kinds and sports. So for them, it wasn't such a deviation from what they saw as a possibility. They obviously hoped I would go down the law path, as every parent does, as you can imagine. But now seeing me now with the family and what I do, they're very happy that I do something I enjoy, and I'm doing quite well at it. But I didn't see it for myself. I think those around me who knew me saw it as a possibility, which is quite interesting.
Well, I mean, looking at your website, there is a picture of you. I got one of those of myself as well, where you are a not fat, but you're plump.
Oh
You got a
yeah.
little pudge
Oh
out
yeah.
there.
The
So,
word I would use is probably chubby or round, very round. Yeah.
So what was the transformation there?
So that was college track and field. There are three photos there. There's one where I'm quite thin, lean, and then there's one where I'm squishy, might be an appropriate word, and then there's one which is somewhat more recent, past couple of years. The first one, basically, I was running track and field in college. My family's Kenyan. I had always been essentially kind of skinny, but almost like a skinny fat skinny, but kind of skinny is probably the best way to describe it. And then I come to Japan. I decide I'm going to put on weight, so help me God, eat a ton of food, put on a bunch of weight, but the wrong weight, as you can see from the photo. Still in my journey of trying to figure it out. That's me at maybe 23 at that time. And then skip forward a few years when I really started to put it together and make sense of the whole thing. That's when I then, as I kind of figured it out for myself, I realized, oh, this is the kind of thing I should help other people with. And that actually is what took me down that path. It was kind of doing it for myself. At that time, I had no intentions of teaching anyone or helping anyone. But as I really started to figure things out for myself, I want to say 23, 24, maybe just before 25, because I think that's when I kind of started the work. I realized, oh, this is, if I can do it, then like anyone can do it. Because I spent my whole, probably, I don't know, 14-ish to 22, 23, maybe, trying to build muscle. And as a guy whose family is Kenyan and doesn't naturally or easily at all pack on muscle, it was always this thing I really wanted to do. So I did it, the wrong way. I ate too little and got kind of too thin, and then I ate too much and I kind of too pudgy. So I kind of had to find the middle. And once I found it, I realized this is something I could help other people with. And that's actually what led me to go down the path of helping others.
Why in Japan?
Why? I guess maybe a better question is just why Japan in general? Japan was, again, it was supposed to be a 1 year journey, maybe a year and a half before going back to the US, taking the LSATs and going to law school. And it just wound up, as I'm sure many people, it has. It just kind of wound up turning into something else entirely.
And I think the first time I met you, you were, doing fitness in the park and Sogo Fitness and everything around that. So, let's talk
That's still
about
happening.
being an entrepreneur, and starting up your gig. Tell me more about that.
This is about Sogo, or about starting up the whole gig? Sogo?
Let's do both. Let's
Sure.
rabbit hole a bit.
Well, I mean, the full trajectory in terms of like the things that have happened, maybe there are four or five kind of landmark things that I've done over my time here. One would be just starting. And again, this was probably 2012, kind of trying to determine what I wanted to do. I taught English here for about a year and a half, moved to Tokyo, received a 3-year visa from a company, didn't want to teach. So I immediately left that work. And then I was just sitting on this 3-year visa. Back in 2011, I think, kind of deciding what am I going to do. And technically, at that point, I was actually probably supposed to leave, but I just didn't, obviously, because I technically had a functioning visa. sat on that for about a year and a half, and then about halfway through, as I had really come into my own fitness kind of space or my understanding, I realized maybe this is a thing I can share with others. I've always enjoyed exercise. Maybe I can kind of pivot. Got a certification, began PT. So this is maybe 2012. And then the next kind of major thing that I do PT for a while, the next major thing is probably starting Sogo Fitness in 2016 with two friends. And that was really a means of meeting somewhere, not a bar or a club or an event of some sort, but just meeting somewhere very neutral outside where we can exercise together and not have to be surrounded by extremely loud music or cigarette smoke or alcohol. And we had no idea at the time it would kind of evolve into what it did and what it has turned out to be now. But that was probably the second big thing, was starting Sogo with these friends, because that for me became, and it still is, probably my most kind of grounding Tokyo community, more so than anything else. I think if you're a big runner, it might be something like Nanban, or if you're big into, some kind of subculture in Japan, it might be that thing. For me, living in Japan, my deepest connection actually really is Sogo and the experience that I've had through that, whether it's going to Okinawa with a big group to do a fitness retreat, or this other island, or whitewater rafting or snowboarding. We've done all kinds of things together. So that'd be number two, one PT 2012, two Sogo May 2016. And then I think it was 2018, a friend of mine named Leo, who now works at Apple, and I started CoFit. And CoFit was this combination of the PT work I was doing, the PT, the physical, the fitness work that he wanted to get involved in, but wasn't professionally doing it. And then we decided, well, why don't we take this kind of thing we do with Sogo and see if we can offer fitness support specifically to organizations in the city that could use this kind of thing as both kind of icebreaking team building activity, but also a way to get people more active, physically active. So we pursued that. We ended up contracting with a couple of pretty cool companies. I don't know whether or not I should disclose them, but I won't. But a couple of pretty big known companies, and one of which we still have a pretty cool contract with today. But basically, this friend of mine, Leo, ended up moving on to different work, I think 2019. So then it was me running this thing solo. Wasn't really something I was able to scale on top of my own work and kind of directing Sogo. So that has just remained the same contract for the past 6 years with this, again, bigger, more known company. And that kind of just is its own thing. It's not something I really want to go out and continue trying to grow on my own, because honestly, I didn't have the bandwidth to do so. So PT itself, Sogo, CoFit, and then 2020, basically 2019 late, but maybe 2020, I actually launched MH Health Coaching, which is my online health and fitness coaching practice, which I've been doing now almost exclusive, not exclusively. I've done the other things too, but my focus has been on this for the past five and a half, almost 6 years.
Now
Those are bigger, maybe major points in the trajectory.
you work with you do coaching for high performers. So it, high performers kind of in business, they're disciplined, but they struggle with their health. Talk more about that.
It's interesting. So one of the more fascinating observations I've found is that the people I work with are, they're all well educated, they're all smart, they're all hardworking, they're all very good at doing, in particular, what it is they do at work. And so when it comes to the details of the job they have, whether this is someone who's working, at a higher level in HR, or someone who's working as the MD of whatever their respective company is, they all get their stuff done with regard to work. And then, of course, they're trying to balance the other side, which is, the family, the personal life. What ends up generally falling to some extent to the wayside ends up being their own health. And really, it's most commonly not the fitness side that suffers most. Most people are smart enough to know that they should, get some steps into the day. They should maybe go for a run here and there, consider going to a gym. It actually ends up being the two major things end up being sleep that suffers and nutrition. And the reasons can vary, but in general, people basically just don't get enough collective sleep. And if they do, it's not the right kind of sleep, because it's disrupted, or they've got too much blue light exposure before going to bed. And then the nutrition front, it's pretty much one of two things. One, they either like drink too much, because as that's a thing in Tokyo in particular, or they're making, in most cases, they're trying, but maybe just not connecting the dots on the nutrition side. That's probably the best way to describe it. Most people who come on and I end up working with, it's again, they're aware about the fitness side. The fitness thing is the thing that I think is most well broadcast out there on YouTube, Instagram, even LinkedIn, all over. People are talking. The fitness side is quite clear, but really locking down nutrition and sleep, those are things that many people I work with have not yet kind of figured out. And that's what we probably spend most time doing.
Wow. And what do you find is like the most common myth that you come up with for
Good
clients when they're
question.
trying to get in shape and lose weight?
This is, this probably personally, but this by far is it. It's this idea that people can basically outrun a bad diet. And and like everyone who has put any real thought into the whole getting healthy thing has heard or seen this whole, hey, you can't outrun a bad diet quote. And so like people are familiar with it, but they still actively try to do it. They still actively try to outrun the bad diet. And it just doesn't work. And so, yeah, like I said, people do the fitness thing first. January 1st, the average person doesn't say, I'm going to start eating really well, prepping my food, this, that, and the other. The average person says, I'm going to join the gym and start like, strength training or running or whatever. And that's still a wonderful idea. But in general, it's not going to be fitness itself that gets most people where they're trying to go. It's going to be the combination of eating okay, getting decent sleep, and just doing some activity. Like if everyone just did that, we would be in a much better place collectively.
It's like I hang out with a lot of runners, and it's like, oh, I did my long run, so I definitely deserve this ice cream. It's like,
That exactly, exactly. Yeah.
I've been guilty of that, but
Yeah, we, and we all, I mean, we all have to some, but it's that's by far the biggest kind of myth that I think people don't necessarily talk about that much. They just kind of naturally do it. They justify eating in a certain way because of maybe some activity they did. And that ends up always counteracting the work they put in. And thus people end up in the same place year after year after year, generally speaking.
I think one of the big insights for me was always that there's a difference between being fit and being healthy.
Yeah, there really is. There really is.
Is
Yeah.
it...
Oh, and this is curious for me. What might that difference be for you? What's kind of your interpretation of that difference?
Yeah, I can go out and run a marathon,
Yep.
but am I, really putting the best food in my body? And
Am I getting appropriate sleep? Am I making enough time for recovery? Am I doing any mobility or flexibility training on a regular basis? Yeah, it's those things. And again, as a guy who's in the industry, anyone who's going out and being active, I have to look at and say, hey, kudos to you. That's actually a win. Like, being active is awesome. It's just, it's the understanding. What I hope to get across to people is the understanding that going out there and being active is a great, I don't know, maybe first step, but it is not the only thing. And in fact, for most people who are interested in, for example, carrying less fat mass, or having more energy or staying more alert throughout the day, simply just eating better could actually resolve a lot of those issues. Probably better than the exercise you're doing, but the exercise is still great. So, a lot of the work I do with people when they come on is to kind of really look at, the big four, which I think is something we'll probably get into today: food, fitness, sleep, and stress, and say, okay, which of these would make most sense for us to try to unpack and tackle first? And in the majority of the cases, it ends up being, as I said earlier, the sleep and food side of things that we end up diving into first, despite most people thinking of health and fitness coaching as kind of fitness focused. Fitness is a part of it, but it's generally not the biggest part.
So I love reading your stuff, your newsletter, and your posts, because it's just
Thank
very
you.
practical, kind of common sense. It's not like, okay, you need to, do something outlandish. It's like, have you got 8 hours sleep?
Get sleep, drink more water, try walking more. Like it's pretty simple stuff, but the results are massive when done well.
I think you've already alluded to it, but walk us through your four pillar framework.
Sure. One second as well. Kaiken, I'm doing a podcast. You're gonna have to probably do this upstairs. Yes. Can you do you read this? You can take your book. David, sorry, this might be easier. This might be the one thing we end up cutting if you cut, sorry.
That's all right.
E, Okay. I'm guessing David time was an hour, 30 minutes from now. 30? Was
Yeah,
it
we'll be done in
like
30
45
minutes.
minutes? Good. Sorry. Did you want to re-ask me the question? Would that be helpful?
Sure. So walk us through your four pillar framework.
Yes. So I call them the big four. They're pretty simple: food, fitness, sleep, and stress. And again, whenever I work with someone, the first thing we do in our first conversation is what I'm trying to discern is which of these four might be the most relevant for this person to get wherever it is they're trying to go. And as I mentioned earlier, honestly, in the majority of cases, the individual comes in thinking that maybe it's fitness because of what we discussed earlier. Some are aware enough to know, oh, I really need to get my nutrition in line. But almost no one who comes on recognizes, as an example, how significant sleep is in the big, in the big process, in the big, big picture. And then the direct correlation to sleep is generally stress. But stress can be more, again, kind of big picture. Like, what does our day look like? What are the demands we're taking on? What are the responsibilities we have, or the hats we're wearing, or kind of the plates we're spinning? So we really dive in and tackle all of that altogether. And depending on the individual, we'll focus on one thing or the other. I think what's most common actually is that when someone comes on, they've got a pretty good grasp on maybe one of them. Like maybe they at some point they really tackled sleep. They're like, oh, I really need to do the sleep thing. It's like sleep is actually great. Like, oh, that's actually wonderful. But we still have like this thing and that thing we need to get into. And so by having those four, what I've realized is it makes it very clear, not only to me, but to the individual I'm working with, where the lowest hanging fruit is. And once we're able to kind of tackle that, honestly, everything else gets a lot easier.
Okay.
And so that's why the framework exists.
That's great. Let's unpack those a little bit, because let's start
Sure.
with sleep, because I mean I traditionally was always prided myself on getting that 4 or 5 hours sleep.
Yep.
I got time at the end of my life, when I'm dead, to do all
Exactly.
that
I'll
sleep.
sleep on
That
the
makes
weekend.
it.
I'll sleep when I die, that whole thing.
Yeah. So
So
how do you coach somebody around like that? You don't have enough time. I need to get up and train. I need to, get all my stuff in before I get to work, and then I got my busy day. Four hours is enough. Well, how do you work with someone like that?
First of all, it is to convey through conversations that we have, videos that are relevant, TED Talks. There's a book I recommend most people check out, which I'll mention in a moment, to convey clearly the significance of sleep on not only one's long-term health, but one's short-term health. And as you can imagine with high performers, what's probably most important is like, how is this going to help me do better in the things I'm trying to do, so their performance as well. So it's really to look at, okay, how is sleep going to impact short-term health, long-term health, and overall performance. And I think once people can see that, then directing more energy towards improving sleep quality, duration, et cetera, becomes much, much easier. So it always starts with, let's understand why this sleep thing matters. And again, generally that happens maybe our first or second conversation where, as well as other things, we're talking about sleep. Once that clicks, then depending on where the individual is suffering, in your case, it might be duration. You're only in 4 hours, so we need to move that out to maybe seven. Then we can kind of unpack how we do that. And generally, if it's a duration issue, we'll look at the schedule. So we'll look at what's your evening schedule and your morning schedule, and then we'll build out an ideal morning and evening schedule. And because we have that schedule, we can really optimize for whatever we're trying to do. Maybe it's 8 hours, maybe it's 7 hours, but certainly more than 4 hours. That's more of a duration issue. When it's a sleep quality issue, that's where we tend to take a greater look at like stress and how does that affect the sleep or lack of sleep that's kind of going on. And so again, it'll kind of depend on the individual and what's going on. So oftentimes people don't get horrible sleep. Most people are getting maybe six and a half, 7 hours of sleep. That's probably the average person I take on. Very seldom do I get someone who's getting 4 hours or 5 hours. Most people are, they know sleep is a thing they should prioritize, so getting maybe six and a half. But then, and this might be insightful for you, but certainly listeners, another thing to kind of take into account, and I just had a conversation with a new client on Sunday, so yesterday, about this. When we started working together, which was, we just had our second call, but on our first call, when we were discussing how long he's normally sleeping, he basically told me he's sleeping on average about 8.5 hours of sleep, which is rare and amazing. Actually, that's amazing. The guy's name's John. I said, John, this is incredible. That may not be something we really have to unpack and get into, but like that's so far so good. That sounds really great. He then ended up getting a wearable, tracking his sleep better, and his realization was that although he's laying in bed for about 8.5 hours of sleep, he's actually only getting around 7 to 7:15 of sleep based on the tracker he was wearing, where in his case, that's an Oura ring. It's a ringy ring. And so his immediate insight week one was, yes, I'm in bed for a good amount of time, but I'm actually not getting nearly enough qu like quality sleep. And even within that, I'm not getting enough REM sleep, which obviously he had no idea about prior to wearing his wearable. So, two sessions in, he knows that yes, he's doing this pretty well, but we could work on X, Y, and Z. And then in, to improve X, Y, and Z, there are any number of things we can do to improve sleep hygiene, ranging from manipulating or controlling room temperature, the amount of noise that's around you, either none or putting on white noise or any other things, kind of ambient noise, light situation, whether that involves wearing an eye mask, getting blackout curtains, etc. Back to the sound one, it could be wearing your not earpods. Really forgetting this term.
Like headphones?
No, little green things you put in your ear to block sound. How am I forgetting the name of this, the word of this? How is this happening?
I used earplugs.
Earplugs. Did I say
Okay.
earplugs?
I think you said
Yeah,
earplugs,
I
yeah.
already said it. Okay, I was like, why was I searching for this word? Yeah, sorry, earplugs. So either way, so in my case, I'm very much an earplugs, eye mask guy. Like if I could just cut out distraction from the world, I can just get into my little sleep cocoon, and that helps me sleep pretty well. For others, that's not the case. They prefer ambient noise. They prefer, not having anything on their face. So it really depends on the individual. And we actually dive in and figure all that out over time. So again, there are any number of ways to improve sleep, but at its core, we're looking at, are we trying to increase duration or are we trying to increase quality? In every case, you want ideal duration and ideal quality, but for most people, it tends to be, one of those things is really struggling. So in the case of John, it was not duration, it was kind of quality in order to get his actual sleep time of 7 hours to maybe 7.5 or 7:45. In your case, as an example, as a 4 or 5 hour sleeper, it's probably just going to be off the bat increasing the duration. And then within that, obviously, quality.
So my big when I shifted my sleep pattern, one of the things that changed right away was, I don't have any time to sleep, right? But the fact of the matter is, the more time I spent sleeping, the higher income and outcome I had during the day, so I didn't need that extra time.
That is the kicker. The kicker is I stay up late because, the average excuse is I'm working. In many cases, it's a combination of work and then just obviously mindless scrolling. But in general, it's working late and working later than ideally than ideal, and then that bleeds into the evening. And then as a result of that, there's just not enough sleep or quality sleep is broken. When the irony is, if you're able to get enough sleep, the amount of time required to complete the tasks that you want to complete would be shortened because you are more productive, more focused, more alert. Everything is better. You're just net more productive. And again, for high performers, that's relevant because every person that I've ever worked with wants to be able to be more productive, faster, better at whatever their respective thing, and getting better sleep has a direct impact on that.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed, especially on the weekends, and if I have a long run, if I'm working, for example, or doing something, and I'm just really tired and my mind's not shifting, I'll go and lay down for
Yeah.
10 minutes. I really, really fall asleep for 10 minutes, but then I'm right awake. The rest of the day is just magnificent. It's a brilliant.
Napping is it is a godsend. It is really special. I haven't done a lot of it recently because of my, frankly, my best case scenario, your evening sleep schedule is good enough that you don't require naps during the day. That's actually best case scenario. But in some cases, if you're just not able to get enough sleep or your sleep is broken for any number of reasons, common one is like having young children or again, having maybe a super high stress job or just being in, you're an engineer and you're in hell week and you've just got to stay up late. And if that's the case, then if you can just find little windows, one or two throughout the day to just get a 10, 15 minute power nap, it can go a long way in terms of physical, but especially kind of your mental health.
And
And
as an athlete, that's what I mean. Athletes work out and they sleep. That's and eat. That's
it. Yeah.
one other takeaway. If listeners don't take anything away, this is a good one. Alcohol ruins sleep. You think you sleep well, but if you're wearing a wearable, you and I didn't talk about it, but I mean, you wear a wearable, you might get 6 hours sleep, but you look at your REM sleep at zero, right? And it's sleep scores are always bad. I might only have maybe one beer. Sleep score drops by 20, 30 points.
And so that's another one. We didn't, alcohol generally falls in the nutrition category. It has its own thing, but I definitely put that in the nutrition pillar. As it relates to sleep, as it relates to health in general, this is probably a better place to start. Alcohol can very much be part of a healthy lifestyle, meaning you can drink alcohol and still live a net healthy life. Absolutely. And for those who really enjoy alcohol, I think that that's a perfectly fine way to, approach living life. I get it completely. In the same way that I think it was you and I at some point who discussed chocolate chip cookies and like, what's life without cookies? Like, I love cookies. And I agree. Like, if we couldn't eat anything that we really enjoyed, candy, cookies, cake, because it's not healthy, then yeah, in some ways, what's the point? Like, if I can't enjoy the things I want to enjoy, why bother? I think alcohol very much could be put in that same category. But the truth is, we probably all know I shouldn't be eating like a huge chocolate chip cookie every day. Like, that's probably just not a good idea for health. In the same way, you probably shouldn't be drinking at all, but every day. But there's a time for everything. There's a time for birthday cake when you're celebrating. That's my take on alcohol. If you're gonna have alcohol, have it as a celebration. Don't have it as a stress mitigator, because it just doesn't work well. And as it ties into sleep, part of the reason is because alcohol itself is a both depressant, but it's also a sedative, basically. And so when you consume alcohol, just like you said, the reason sleep scores become so bad is because it, number one, disrupts your normal sleep pattern. So in your case, I think you're mentioning it's REM sleep that suffers. You just don't fall into your four sleep categories the way you should. And it just messes that up. But then additionally, your metabolism, it's going to mess with that because your body's not metabolizing regular nutrients the way it should. Instead, your liver is trying to pump out the alcohol because it's a toxin in your system. So it just kind of messes things up. And so for those who do drink, yeah, we kind of unpack how do we go about drinking in a way that supports a net healthy lifestyle and more specifically doesn't impede on sleep. Same thing applies to coffee. We don't have to get into that now necessarily, but caffeine or coffee itself contains caffeine, of course. Can coffee be consumed in a healthy way? Absolutely. Do many people consume way too much coffee? Yes, as you and I both know. And then in particular, timing matters. So if you're going to drink coffee, try drinking it early in the day. Try not to have any afternoon. So once, 12 p.m., 1 p.m. has arrived, really you shouldn't be having any coffee. And then as it relates to alcohol and timing, similar, very different time schedule, but if you're going to be drinking, you'd want to be doing it ideally as early as possible so you can flush it out of your system before you go to bed. That's kind of the best case scenario for consumption. Meaning if you've got an event and it starts at 7 and you're going to have a drink or two, maybe have that drink at 7 and then really try to not drink anything by, let's say, 8. It'll give your body enough time to flush out the one or two drinks before you get into bed at 10 or 11. So by the time you actually sleep, the overwhelming majority of the alcohol you consumed is no longer in your system, thus having far less great impact on your sleep.
Right. I was hoping you weren't going to say that it's time to have Irish coffees and Bloody Marys for breakfast.
No, you don't have to do all that.
We have to drink early in the day.
The biggest thing is just ensuring that your body has time to flush out the alcohol. If you don't, that's when the suffering is greatest. So if you end up having a big night and you go to bed immediately in that sedated state with the messed up cycles, your metabolism is going to be messed up. That's the worst sleep you're going to get. And again, as a high performer, the worst part of that is that the next day, like you're ruined. And that's the part that's really the kicker. And that was one of the reasons I ended up getting away from it, was just knowing that anytime I drank in the evening, it was always going to be a decent amount of alcohol. I kind of knew that I was losing the next day. That frustration for me was just too great. At some point, I realized it's not worth it. It's just too costly. So I moved away.
What about one of your pillars, which often is not spoken about, is stress? Let's talk about that.
So stress is, what's interesting is if we look at the other three, so fitness, nutrition, and sleep, they're very easily calculable. Like you can very easily measurable is probably a better word. It's very easy to measure the amount of exercise you're doing. It's very easy to measure the amount of food you're consuming, technically, if you weigh it and all that, you can do that precisely. It's also quite easy to measure the quality of your sleep and the duration. What's least easy to measure is stress. And so stress is one of my pillars, despite it being the most challenging to measure, because it has an impact on everything. Meaning if somebody is, so when I take someone on, one of the questions I ask them off the bat, first time we talk on the phone or we do a Zoom call, is on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you imagine your stress level to be? And I would say on average, most people probably say somewhere between maybe 5 and 8. It's probably most average. It's almost never a one. It's very seldom a 3, and it's very seldom like a 10. But I do get the occasional 9 or 10. And that's usually in windows. Most people are probably average around a 6 or 7, and then they have, again, the engineer's got hell week, this person, it might be recruiter at the end of a quarter, that period that's really, really intense where it's a 9 or a 10. And the reality is I have to take into account stress because if I don't, it won't allow us to effectively address the other things. Because as an example, if somebody's at a 9 or a 10, let's say an 8 level of stress, this is obviously subjective, but their own subjective assessment is, hey, I'm at an 8. If we're trying to tackle, let's say sleep as an easy one, because we're just coming off that conversation, I have to recognize that being at a level 8 or 9 stress is going to have a direct impact on especially one's quality of sleep, always. There's a, like once somebody says I'm a level 8, I already know there's going to be an impact on sleep before we even discuss sleep. So there's a really clear correlation there. Whereas on the flip side, to keep it simple, if somebody comes in, they say they're at a level 4, like, hey, things are pretty good. I just changed jobs. It's actually going really well. Or, I've been in a role a long time. I've got everything figured out. And they're at a 4. There's usually a correlation to the quality and duration of sleep. So those are usually very closely linked. But again, it being the least obviously measurable of the 4, I kind of use it as a gauge of how well we'll be able to address the other things, if that makes sense. So sleep is extremely high. I already know we're going to have trouble tackling the other things. So we will generally just focus on how do we reduce from a 9 to a 7 or 6. And that'll be our primary focus. I cannot take someone on who's at a 10 and expect us to effectively build out a good training program, eat better food, and get quality sleep because they just won't have the bandwidth to do that. So sleep is kind of that initial, I've got to know where that is because if that's manageable, then we can tackle these other things. But if it's not, we can't. That's actually the significance of the stress pillar.
That's great. Thank you for that. Yeah, I love how they're interrelated. I know, like, during the Lehman crisis, work was tough, and my stress was probably always in the 9 or 10. I ran twice a day for that.
Nice.
Helping keep both those going.
No, it's great. And I mean, you're a bit of an anomaly because, I mean, because you're a runner and you're an avid runner and you're aware of all these things. The average person who's sitting at a 9 or a 10 is not going out and doing double sessions of exercise. They're self-medicating with alcohol or what they think is going to help, which is like more Netflix screen time, whatever, or just basically distraction, or food. Like those are the biggest ones end up being food, alcohol, or distraction to try to offset the stress side. But none of those end up being effective. The single most effective de-stressor by far, you already nailed it on the head, it's actually exercise. And even one step before that, and this is why we do the ideal morning and evening routine, is to look at like why are we at a 9 or a 10? Like actually, what is the cause of the 9 or 10? And then can we address that first? Best case scenario, if we're able to address that, then we can immediately move it from a 9 to, I don't know, maybe a 7 by just tackling the actual cause of the stress. If we cannot impact the cause of the stress, we have to find a way to de-stress. And the best way to do that is, as you mentioned, exercise.
One of the things that you and I always agree on is habit building versus quick fixes, because I just hate quick fixes. What is your approach to creating lasting change for your clients?
Awesome question. To keep it simple, first and foremost, when forming any new habit, we really have to start with one thing at a time. I think it's important that people be aware of that. You just have to tackle one thing at a time. And it doesn't have to be a big thing, but it has to be one specific, generally, ideally measurable thing at a time. So, again, in the case of the person who's not getting enough sleep and we need to get more sleep and get more duration of sleep, it's tackling just getting more net sleep, which again will generally go, involve looking at the schedule and all this. If it's the person who's not doing any activity or getting 3,000 steps a day when they should be getting 5, 6, 7, maybe 10, it's maybe we just focus on steps first. I've even taken on clients for context who our biggest first priority is just getting up at a certain time, believe it or not. Literally, our first 4 weeks of working together, on top of, kind of tackling other things, is just waking at the right time. Because in her case, by waking up at the right time, which in this case was between 6 and 6:15 a.m., she was able to do all the other things. And this is actually right around COVID at this example I'm giving. Whereas when we were not working together, she was waking up at maybe 8 or 8:30, and then that 2 hour window was gone. And so she lost the ability to do all those things she wanted to do, which ranges from pleasure reading to stretching to, she's a runner, so running. She was living down at Kamakura at the time. Surfing was something she wanted to do here and there. So it depends on the individual, but as it relates to forming new habits to really just lock this in, it is do one thing at a time and make it as easy to accomplish as possible. So find the smallest, most short version of success possible and aim for that. And then once you're able to accomplish that on a regular basis, or even just, a few days in a row, you can then tack on more.
How do you do, I mean, because as a coach, you're always accountable for those changes. So that's easy. But how do you do all this without micromanaging?
Oh, good question. So I think the mic maybe this might be this is my approach. I think a more micromanaging approach would be for me to reach out to individuals I'm working with to say, hey, did you do this thing? Hey, thing, hey, did you do that thing? Instead of that, we create a system depending on the individual and our focus where the individual just checks in with me. And so my role becomes the person who gets the check-in, and then I'll respond in whatever way seems relevant based on the check-in itself. So what it allows for is the individual to know, and again, this is something we agree upon, and frankly, everyone I work with wants to do this. They want more accountability, but they don't necessarily want to be micromanaged, but they want to ensure that what we aim to do, they actually do. So generally speaking, I call it a DCC, which is a daily chat check-in for those with whom we're doing this. They'll send me a thing. So it could be like, a picture of the treadmill workout that they finished. Or in the case of the 6:15 wake up, it was literally a text message between the hours of 6 and 6:30. So in that 30-minute window, and it was just a check-in. It was like, it could be one word, it could be a thumbs up, it could be a meme. It doesn't matter. Generally, I try to keep it like fun and light. So it's like an easy thing to do. It's not some big report. But that way, there's that accountability created through a check-in system. And then I know who I'm working with and who needs to check in. And so if I don't get a check-in by whatever the respective time is, whether that's noon or it could be, 6 p.m., then I'll send a quick note. Hey, did you get to the whatever? Or how was the day? And honestly, what's fascinating about habit formation is the difference between doing the thing you're trying to do and not doing the thing you're trying to do is so small. It's like, it's such a, in most cases, it's not like you're going out and running a marathon. It's not some 3 hour thing. It's like, I need to, get 30 minutes more steps in the day so I can get to from my, I don't know, 6K to 9K. Like 30 minutes of steps is not hard to do. Anyone could pull that off. Even if your excuse is, oh, I want to relax in the evening and look at my phone, like go take a walk and listen to a podcast, and you can make it work throughout the day if you're conscious of the fact that you need to make it happen. The single biggest factor when people that I think the single I think the single biggest factor that prevents people from executing on new habits they're trying to form isn't actually that they don't have the time or they don't have the available resources or facilities or apparatus. It's generally that distraction happens. So they just forget that the thing they need to do is the thing they need to do, or they deprioritize it by prioritizing something else because they forget that this thing actually is a hugely important priority. So the average person, again, if we're talking about high performers, they've got a lot of things they need to do each day. If you add on like, a spouse and then children and all that, that just increases the responsibility there. You might, again, role matters, but in general, most people have quite demanding roles. Every day, there are a bunch of things that need to get done. And in most cases, the health and fitness thing will end up getting deprioritized in order to prioritize the, let's say, work thing, or in some cases, it's a family thing. What I really hope to convey to people, and this happens with the people I work with, is to recognize you don't have to sacrifice professional success or family time or me time in order to keep your health and fitness or get your health and fitness to the level you're trying to get it to, they can all be done simultaneously. And I think when people really get that, then it becomes much easier to make the healthy habits they're trying to form consistent. But in order to get to that place where they can really see it and are really doing it, again, micromanaging isn't the word I'd use, but there is need for an accountability system. And in most cases, I use that kind of DCC system. But in other cases, there are other kind of ways in which we go about creating accountability. And that accountability, more than anything, is just a reminder. Because without that reminder, then again, distraction happens. And then the next thing you know, we're on our next call, assuming we don't have any kind of check-in, we're on our next call. And, X, Y, and Z didn't happen because I didn't have time, or I forgot, or, I missed it on the first day. And then I just, it kind of escaped my mind. So having those little check-ins really ensures that even if something happens on day one and they forget or they miss the mark, that's okay. Day two, hey, what are we doing today? And then they know, oh yeah, I've got to just, and these things are easy. Again, it's not 3 hour long things. It's I've got to do a 15 minute stretch, or, it's simple stuff.
That's great. But lot of people, are on diets or tried diets and they just didn't work, and they're on and off diets or they're going with fads. When someone's on that kind of treadmill, how do you kind of help them? What do you say to someone like that?
Good question. There are a couple different ones. So big diets we've heard of recently. You've got keto. Paleo was big years ago. There was a time when Atkins was big. Veganism has become increasingly popular. Vegetarianism has always been around. The carnivore diet's a kind of newer one that people have experimented with and talk a lot about. So these are, number one, these are diets that generally focus on nutrient balance. So they're generally a manipulation of the kind of nutrients you're eating. Versus the total quantity or the timing. So in the case of like keto, it's a lot of protein, a lot of fat, very little carbohydrates. In the case of vegetarianism, it's the opposite. It's very, very little meat, possibly none or any animal products. In the case of veganism, lots of vegetables, carbohydrates, etc. So, anyways, most diets are a manipulation of the nutrient balance, not so much energy balance, not so much meal timing. Then you have other things. For example, you've got the person who has tried a lot of things and now they're considering Ozempic or some other kind of like drug or pill to help with the process. And I'm actually at this point now where, because there is availability of these kinds of things and they do actually work, I've come to a place in my practice where I recognize, these things can work. And so there might have been a time in the past when I would look at the magic bullet and think, don't do that. That's a horrible approach for X, Y, and Z reasons. I'm now at this place where I recognize, okay, there are certain people for whom these methods can actually be very effective. What's important, most important, and this is, I think, what your question is getting at, is ensuring that even if you do any one of these things and they happen to work for you, whether it's keto or Ozempic, whatever, you've got to find a way to maintain the results you get from that thing. And the problem is, almost all of these don't do a good job preparing individuals for that. So I've worked with countless people who have done any number of these things that we've discussed. And again, this is less veganism, vegetarianism, more like keto, carnivore diet, or again, the extreme of the Ozempic, who then come to me and say, hey, I did this thing, saw amazing results for X period of time, got maybe even to my goal, stopped doing said thing, and now have gained a whole bunch of weight or all the way back. And so, there's one other story I'll share quickly, but there's a guy I've just started working with. We had our first call, I think it was on maybe Friday of last week. He used to live in Hong Kong. He did this extraordinary system, got there at this gym. He got great results over the course of 6 months. He actually had this before and after photo on the website of this other company. And the point is, the work he did with the results he got from that program were fantastic. He was happy with it. They were happy with it. It was a complete win. Several years later, this is now maybe 5 years later, when we had our conversation, and he's now just come on board with me, what he realized is, although the work he did there was extraordinary and he got great results, again, similar to the keto Ozempic thing, it didn't actually prepare him to live the rest of his life applying those same things that he did while he was there. So here he is 5 years later coming on a new program with me, but our focus is, yes, to get similar or same slash similar results to what he did before, but to do it in such a way that when we finish working together, he's not going to need me or some other trainer or coach in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, or even 10 years, because he has finally learned what he needs to learn in order to maintain those results. And so that's the problem. You're thinking your question is like, how do you get someone off the treadmill of trying this, trying that, trying this, trying that? It's to get across that in most cases, the individual I'm speaking to who's on that, yo-yo diet trajectory, hey, did you try this before? Yeah, what kind of results did you get? These. Did you try that before? What kind of results did you get those? The reality is you could just go and try some other diet and you'll probably see success for that short period of time. And then you'll get back to exactly where you are now. If you actually want to tackle this once and for all, this is how we do it. And everyone I talk to is like, actually, yeah, that's exactly what I want. Not only do I want results, but I don't want to yo-yo anymore. I'm kind of sick of the up and down. That's when we really just kind of go down and we focus on like, what are the basics? What is it at a base level we should be doing no matter where we are in the world, no matter what our family status is, no matter what role we have? Like, if you can just do these basics, you should be able to maintain whatever kind of level of health and fitness you want. And it's by kind of tackling or understanding that, then individuals then are able to kind of transition from, oh, okay, I don't need to just cycle through the keto diet every 2 years. I can do a thing that can last. And one step further to answer your question, the people who don't, for whom that doesn't click, unfortunately, and these are very few and far between, there's a very small percentage of the people who come on and work with me, they end up unfortunately staying on that same up and down. And so I've worked with, honestly, it's a very small number because almost everyone I work with is not only open to change, but also, they're willing to go ahead and really put in the work. But very seldom do I work with somebody who's kind of unable. I would use the word unable because in most cases, I don't think it's unwilling. They're almost just unable to see the I don't know, better future, which is a little simpler. And so there are a few people who kind of remain trapped in that mindset. And it's rare though. Most people are receptive to this idea that I did a thing, I saw okay results, and maybe I've done that same thing several times in the past decade or 2 decades. But if I keep doing the same thing, I'll keep getting the same results. Like most people can see that. Some people just they're so deep in it, they really struggle to see it. And those are probably the most difficult people to work with because, and I almost am at a point where I almost feel like it's not even almost a fault of their own kind. I mean, maybe it is, but I almost view it as it's they've just gotten locked in this loop, and it's kind of really hard to get out of it. So those can be some of the more challenging people to work with because they're well intentioned, but maybe they just can't see it.
That's great. I think that's another great example of the difference between fit and health.
Yeah.
Say,
Yeah.
I mean,
Correct.
if you
Correct.
can, if it's a lifestyle and something you can do long term, it's a healthy thing
Correct.
versus just being fit. You've done a
Exactly.
diet for 3 months.
Exactly. It's easy to, it, basically, this is, it's easy to get fit. It's harder to remain healthy.
Now you're on a mission to impact 10,000 people by
Yes.
2026. Awesome. How's that going?
Good. So for me, what that means is, and we actually had this conversation a few years back, I launched myself completely into LinkedIn several years back. And what I've realized is that basically all of the people I work with are on LinkedIn all the time, as opposed to, let's say, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. I'm sure people, use those platforms for their purposes, but the people I work with, they're on LinkedIn. And so my 10K specifically for me actually relates primarily to social media, and in this case, largely LinkedIn. Because the reality is, if I look at the number of people I've worked with on an individual basis, look at the amount of people who have been impacted through, for example, even just Sogo Fitness, I'm fairly certain that number is probably well past the 10K mark over the past total of 13 years, with Sogo the past 9 years. Because we have, on a weekly basis, I mean, there are a lot of recurring people, but we have a ton of new people come in and participate in any one of our, Sogo events. So I think if I were making that number more focused on just collective people who the work I've done or been involved with has touched, I think it's probably well past the 10K mark at this point. But for me, I'm actually much more focused on growing things like, the newsletter to really just get out information to people, especially who are based in Japan, who could really benefit from it, as well as just connecting with individuals and sharing, the truths of health and fitness, which is, hey, it's not that hard. And, you can do it, basically, is the big message. I just, there was a post on LinkedIn just a few days ago from a connection of mine. He's a principal at a school outside of Tokyo, and he basically said, in short, I was once fit. I'm not really fit right now. I really want to get back to being fit. And he kind of left it open-ended, and then a lot of the comments were really supportive, and which was great. Hey man, you can do it. And so, I chimed in with a similar thing, and it was just a reminder that there really are people out there, and I know this, but there are lots of people out there who maybe really do want to change their lives, and they just don't know where to start, and they honestly don't know if they can do it. And so I guess my message to that, that 10K, what'll someday maybe be 100K people is, you can do this. Like, it doesn't matter what your past experiences have been. It doesn't matter how many times you've tried and failed. It doesn't matter what condition you might have, this thyroid thing or that injury or, whatever the situation, like, you can do this. And I think if everyone knew and believed in their heart that to be true, we would have a lot more healthy people. But there are a number of people who really just, they don't know. They're unsure, and they've never seen those kinds of results. They've never made the right connections. And my mission really is to convey to everyone what it is you want for your health and fitness, or even that of your family. It is possible. You can do it. And in many cases, a lot of the information I'm sharing is meant to be, here's how.
That's great. I know I love your ideas around mindset and self-compassion. I think that's so
Yeah.
important, and it's one of the messages I always love is that it's we think you can get healthy quickly. It you can't have a We forget that it you get unhealthy. It took a long time to do that too.
Yeah, yeah.
We just didn't notice that. We were not watching it under a microscope, and then when you go out and you start doing a new program, you're under a microscope and you're thinking, oh, this takes so much. It's so slow. Well, no, it moves pretty fast. You'd be surprised comparatively.
To expand on that, I talk about this often. The average person who's gained 5, 10, 15, 20 kg more than maybe where they want to be didn't do that overnight. They like in zero cases has it happened overnight. In zero cases, has it happened in 3 months? In some rare cases, it's maybe happened over the course of a year or two. That might be like the person who moves to Japan and everything goes upside down, or somebody has a kid and suddenly everything changes, especially for example, women who maybe they go through having a child and then the whole thing changes. But maybe the shortest period of time it could happen is a year or two, but in most cases, it's a decade. It's 2 decades of drinking a bit too much, eating just a bit too much, not getting enough sleep, the whole combination of those things. And then we get in a call and they want to lose 10, 15 kg. And I have to be forthright and say, this is not going to happen in 2 months. It could happen in 6, but most people, I would say on, and this is a bit of this is a figure that I would use just kind of off the top of my head, but 9 out of 10 people who come on and work with me can accomplish what they're trying to accomplish within 12 months. And the majority of those are probably within 6 months. Very seldom do I get someone who wants to lose 50 kilograms because they're 130 kg and they want to get to 80. In the case of that person, that's probably going to be a year and a half, 2 year journey. But in most cases, no matter what the individual wants to do, whether it's having more energy, losing 15 kg, prepping for a marathon, whatever, that could be done in a 12-month period. And it doesn't have to be some insanely rigorous, demanding, crazy time invested 12 months. It's got to be like getting more steps, eating a little less of this, maybe drinking a bit less or less frequently, prioritizing your sleep a bit more, stretching before bed. Like, it's simple stuff. It's really small, simple stuff that when you add up these little things, these 5, 10 little items, they end up having massive results.
Brilliant. So I got some rapid fire questions for you.
Yes.
Let's go
Do my
through.
best to
Got
give you
five of them.
my. Okay.
What number one? What's your most underrated fitness trip tip?
Oh, God, I haven't put any thought into my most underrated fitness tip. Drink more water.
Brilliant. Book or podcast you recommend to clients?
Three, I can't stop at one because these always three. First and foremost, Atomic Habits, James Clear.
Nice.
Number two, Why We Sleep, Matthew Walker. And then three always goes between maybe one of two books. The one that I just love, because I think, again, for the high performers out there, I know you're hard workers and I know you're on a mission, and I want to support you on that mission. I think it's really important to recognize that how we use our time, like what the what's the big picture we're trying to get to? The book name anyway is called 4,000 Weeks.
Oh, I love it. I
The author's name right now is escaping me, but it's a profound book. And you've read it, so I'm sure you know, but if you can get out there and read it, it'll really help you put into perspective the fact that we are here on average for 4,000 weeks. When you think about that number, you realize that's not that many weeks in a sense. And at the end of the day, how we spend our time, the people with whom we engage, like all of that, it really adds up. And like that's life. And so if you
great.
there's a lot to unpack.
Oliver Berkman recommend it.
Yes.
He's very, very fine writer. I like the audio version. He reads it
Same.
himself. I like his voice.
Love hilarious audiobook read, but also really insightful.
He's a nice guy. I sent him a, I was at digress a little bit, was over in Nihonbashi, the bookstore, and they had a big front with him on it with his book in Japanese, and I took a picture
Oh,
and sent
interesting.
it to him, and I was like, I'm in Japan, love your book. Didn't know whether
Nice.
your agent has shown you this or not. And
Yeah.
he wrote me back, and nice guy. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, it's a, like you said, wonderful book. Very fun, like very funny in many ways, but really deeply insightful in a kind of light package. And so
Yes.
awesome to.
Every favorite Tokyo food spot that doesn't ruin your gains.
Oh, amazing. Iyo, easy. Two, but the one I go to is Rio Grande Grill. Another one out there, same deal, is called Barbacoa. Reason
Nice.
being, because I feel like I have to say this, reason being, whether you want to eat a bunch of meat or you want to just eat vegetables, you can get it done in that place.
Love their salad bar. What's one thing you wish everyone knew about health?
It can be easy. I wouldn't say it is easy, but yeah, that's unfair to say. It can be easy. With the right system in place, with the right coach, with the right community, right support, right environment, with the right fill in the blank, it can be easy.
And one of my favorite questions, what's your morning routine?
Ooh, mine's very simple because it doesn't change. I'll give it to you exactly. It's wake up at 6, do my pre-workout or have my pre-workout snacks at about 6:10, get changed, all that. Hit the gym at 6:30. That workout is from 6:30 to 7:30. Return home, shower, change, eat breakfast, hop on my first call. So for me, oh, and then in that, I didn't mention this, but maybe it's so relevant. While I'm cycling to the gym and cycling back, which is maybe 7, 8 minutes each way, I've got one of my ear pods, one of my headphones in, and I'm listening to a podcast or an audiobook.
Nice.
So before I eat breakfast, I've taken a, sh I've worked out, listened to 15 to 20 minutes of a podcast or audiobook. I've kind of run through my kind of standard morning routine. I've had my pre-workout, I've had my supplements and such. By the time I eat breakfast, I've kind of tackled the like health related things I really want to do, and then I can get into my day.
That's great. So what's next for you?
Ooh, I want to say the first word that comes to mind always when I hear this, but this is not actually what I think. I think it comes from like Pinky in the Brain or something. It's just world domination. It's the first word
Nice.
the first phrase always
Make a
comes.
dent in the universe is
Yeah, I
my theory.
think I've always, and this comes from my dad, but I've always wanted to live a life of what I call servant leadership, because I've always wanted to go out there and serve people to help make people's lives and their experience in these 4,000 weeks better. And I think when I was younger, as I mentioned, I wanted to do that through legal practice. That's what drew me. But it wasn't, I have a cousin who's a lawyer who actually is very much living the kind of life path I might have gone down, but I didn't. He was driven by a very specific, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of social justice drive. I didn't have that. I actually just liked the idea of law, but I didn't really know how I was going to serve within that field. When I started working in this industry, it became very clear to me that I could have a very direct, very deeply meaningful impact on people and their lives through this work. And I think that's why I'm now years into doing it, I'm just so passionate about it. And I've seen so many people change for the better and have genuinely positively impacted so many people through this thing that I love. And that I think is why, the big mission is just continue to serve. At the end of the day, like I said earlier, we're here for X number of weeks and then we're done. And when we're gone, I want to live without regret, knowing that I gave of myself to people I care about, to the world, et cetera, and left here having made this place, ideally, a slightly better place.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. I would encourage everybody to sign up for your newsletter. We'll have links to all of the places on the internet that people can find you, and keep on spreading the word. I really appreciate it and enjoyed our conversation, Manya.
Thank you, David. As always, this is it's a joy, and just thank you. It's a wonderful opportunity to chat with you. Any opportunity to chat with you is wonderful. So thank you, David.
I'm doing the uptown low down, yeah.